Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, the New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College. We're looking at the Americas, but we now turn to the most important state to vast parts of the United States of America, especially the burgeoning economies of the Southwest and Texas and California. That is the Mexican election next year, but already it is time, the professor tells me, to choose candidates. Morena is the party dominated by AMLO, the very popular and powerful president of Mexico, who is constrained by constitution, cannot run again. It's a 6-year term. He's looking for candidates to continue his work in developing Mexico as a thriving economy that is critical to the success of the United States. There is opposition, however, and I asked the professor to help me in what appears to be a shaping of the candidates and the arguments for Mexico. The Reuters headline, "Support rising for Mexican opposition presidency hopeful Galvez." We're looking at Ms. Galvez is an opposition senator, and she declared her intention to seek the presidency just recently, and now she's polling well. Professor, when we first spoke of opposition to Morena, you mentioned the historical record in Mexico is to choose one party and maintain it for a long time, and then all the maneuvers are within the party, intra-party. That would have been true for most of the 20th century, I believe. And Morena looks to be matching that conduct, except now there's an opponent. Is this significant for AMLO? He favors, for example, the mayor of Mexico City, Sheinbaum. Is Galvez a threat to his plans? Thank you.
Thank you, John. Well, certainly with the Xochitl Galvez, things are getting a little bit more interesting with Mexican elections. But essentially, we are in the pre-primary phase of Mexican elections right now, in which you have multiple candidates with multiple different coalitions and parties. As you pointed out, because the party which has now become dominant, the movement Morena, has basically taken over the political machinery at the national level of not only the country, but also the states and in the system, it's widely believed that whoever becomes the Morena candidate will win. But apart from the Morena coalition, you also have a coalition of what used to be the three competing parties in Mexico, the PAN, the PRI, and the PRD. And then, of course, you have other smaller parties with less likely prospects. But so on the one hand, with the Morena, although who AMLO wants isn't necessarily who will win within Morena, you have in the upcoming, essentially September is when parties are expected to mostly decide their candidates. But within Morena, you have the one who's seen to be favored by AMLO, the mayor of Mexico City, Claudia Sheinbaum, who's at least in the polls ahead with about 34% of the vote. You then have the former foreign minister, Marcelo Ebrard, at 22%. Again, a little bit more of a kind of a traditional liberal leftist agenda and international agenda that's seen as a little bit complex for the United States. Also within Morena is the former Interior Minister Adán López coming in only about 8%. But it was widely believed that the fight would be between these three and people were looking towards probably Sheinbaum. The former three parties that, again, dominated, the PAN, the PRI, and the PRD, who are now essentially running as a coalition. The fact that within that you had certain traditional candidates, for example, a former priest, Santiago Creel, who's currently the president of the lower house, was talking about running. But then this senator from the PAN, the Xochitl Galvez, she is indigenous. She is very charismatic. She is seen as very popular in Mexico. About 34% of the country gives her a favorable rating. She has done what you would call stunts. And so, in an attempt to block some of AMLO's legislation, she actually chained herself to a desk in the Senate at one point. She did another stunt where to try to contest some of the what she believed were untrue things being said in AMLO's press briefing. She tried to basically force her way into the presidential palace. So she's done a lot of things that, make her seen as a candidate against the establishment in Mexico, even though the establishment is AMLO. The thing that the excitement that was generated is that if there's any candidate that may have the indigenous credentials, the credentials as a charismatic person, the credentials as a woman, the credentials as a bit of a maverick to actually channel that frustration with, again, corruption and complacency in Mexico, it's her. But again, we're still a long way from seeing whether she actually wins essentially her coalition's nomination in September. And we're certainly a long way of seeing, who is going to, basically pull through in the elections. But we could actually have a situation in which you have an election in the dominantly paternalistic, male-dominated Mexican society between two women, Xochitl Galvez and Claudia Sheinbaum. And that would truly be interesting.
I want to press on the Mexico story because it's so important to the success of North America, let alone Central America. I read in Reuters that the U.S. Trade Representative, Catherine Tai, is entering into conversations about USMCA, the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, Free Trade Commission, taking place. And the criticism at Reuters, or the remark at Reuters, it seems ironic, skirting major disputes. Some of those major disputes sound profound. For example, the U.S. is anxious about factory workers in Mexico and how they're treated. At the same time, there are questions about origins of automobile parts, where something is made, whether in Canada, Mexico, or the U.S., having to do with the Biden administration's intention to bring as much home to America as possible. There are other matters of GMO, genetically modified corn in Mexico, and Canada has concerns about dairy quotas. I read all this menu because I don't know how critical it is. Has this happened before, Professor? The U.S. Trade Representative enters into these talks with Mexico, and they trade ambitions for a while and then resolve it, because this article suggests they're skirting these issues.
Absolutely, John. What's happening right now is that certainly, especially since 1994, when you had the negotiation of the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, which bound the U.S., Mexico, and Canada economies together like never before and created the possibility of integrated supply chains and things like that. And then, of course, under the Trump administration, you had the upgrading, the modernization of NAFTA into what's now called the USMCA. One of the provisions of USMCA is regular senior-level consultations about ongoing trade issues. And so this is really a obligatory meeting under the USMCA guidelines between, basically our trade person, U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai, her Mexican counterpart, their economy secretary, Raquel Bienrostro, and the Canadian Minister of Trade, Mary Ann G. What the Reuters story is calling attention to is the fact that right now, largely because of the AMLO administration, you have all of these items of concern within our very, very important relationship. And so you have the Mexicans trying to basically block major imports of U.S. yellow corn into the country, raising concerns over genetics. You have the Mexicans blocking access to U.S. and other energy producers by favoring what they call CFE. But also you do have Canada issues with regard to access to their dairy sector. And so the really key point is what should be a relatively routine meeting probably will not get into a whole lot of detail about really the depth of some of these disputes between these three countries. But what's really underlying is just how important this economic relationship between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada has become within that framework of USMCA, and just thus, how important those disputes and where politicians are taking the relationship are right now.
And I cannot tell, Evan, because there's so many stories that, about Mexico that focus on one thing, immigration, the wait times, the people returned to Mexico, the troubles along the border. But what we're talking about seems far more profound because it speaks to the prosperity of both nations, at the same time to the ambitions of the U.S. to develop Mexico as a market and for Mexico to develop the U.S. as a source of employment. I mentioned energy policies. The Reuters story points out that Mexico has made remarks about opening its energy market to outside competitors, but my memory is that Mexico regards its Pemex as a crown jewel of the state and is not eager to share. All of these are long-running stories. Would you characterize the relationship between the Biden administration and the AMLO administration as friendly, as working on these matters, or have people built red lines everywhere about things as critical as energy?
In my judgment, the relations with the Biden administration in Mexico continue to be friendly. There is cooperation on certainly border issues and to an extent on security issues. But it's friendly, I would say, in spite of a number of things that have been done largely on the Mexican side, because the Biden administration has certainly been, I think, very attentive to not only speaking to Mexico in a more respectful tone, but also trying to find issues, whether it's social justice or environment or other things. But within that, as you pointed out, you had the first of all a foreign policy that is much less cooperative with the United States under Marcelo Ebrard. You had a security policy that has really moved away from, at least has raised some concern in terms of what's going on in terms of, possible protection of certain cartels like the Sinaloa cartel, which continue to be talked about. But in the trade area, you have separate issues in petroleum and electricity. And so in petroleum, you have a move towards a much more nationalistic policy of Pemex. Previously, under the Enrique Peña Nieto administration, there was a continuing opening up of the Mexican oil sector to outside investors. And of course, the U.S. and Mexico actually share across the Gulf of Mexico many of those same oil fields. And so, but it's not just about Pemex. It's about, for example, electricity. So, for example, do U.S. companies like Sempra Energy have access to the Mexican electricity market? What AMLO has tried to do is to prioritize what's called the Mexican Federal Electricity Commission, the CFE, to get that basically to generate electricity in ways that are seen as prejudicial to private companies, especially private companies from outside countries like the United States. And of course, you have the other issues such as the agricultural issue, GMO corn. And so in the interest of nationalism, the AMLO administration has become much more protectionist in ways that's raised a lot of concerns in terms of the health of our relationship. But despite those concerns, I would say certainly the Biden administration and Mexico tend to continue to talk nice, continue to try to maintain dialogue. And I think the Biden administration is trying to be careful to avoid offending or calling out in too strong of terms those behaviors.
Professor Evan Ellis, the U.S. Army War College, the Latin American research professor, part of the Strategic Studies Institute that works for directly to the DOD. We're going to go to the most significant election in the Americas in this calendar year, Argentina, candidates, and mentioning China. This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report. I'm John Patch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.